We hear so much about data breaches, hacked passwords. What is it really all about? What does an attacker do with your password or your credit card information once you're hacked? Thomas Holt is a professor of criminal justice at Michigan State University. Tom, I Googled the term recent hacking news and I was flooded with stories and reports. And yet I have to ask myself, what could anyone do with the password to my modest little Twitter account? Who cares? I mean, is that a fair question?
It is, because on the one hand, you wouldn't think it's worth anyone else's time to have access to your Twitter account. But on the other hand, there's so much that a person can do with a Twitter account or a Facebook account that you might never think of that can be monetized or used in different ways to draw people in for various types of cybercrime.
All right, let's talk about that. We'll start with the social media account data. What kinds of things could be done with my modest little Twitter account?
Well, your Twitter account could be used to send out spam or to take over a botnet and allow it to be commanded and controlled. And a botnet is a type of malicious software that once it infects a series of computers, it can be used for a variety of different things, whether it's sending spam or using to engage in what's referred to as a distributed denial of service attack, where you essentially knock a website or some service offline for a period of minutes or hours or even days.
To cause mischief or to make money?
It depends. The person who wants to engage in the attack may have a revenge motive in mind. They may try to use it to blackmail, say, a company or a person that if your website's offline, you can't draw customers to it. So it may be worth your time and effort to pay us $1,000 and we won't attack your site. So it just depends on the interest of the individual attacker. But the person who's running the botnet or who's running the attack service is going to be able to generate a huge profit as a result.
And what about medical data, Tom? Who wants that and why?
Oh, boy. Medical data is a huge problem, and it's hard to know exactly who wants it. At the moment, some hacks that involve medical data or personal information that's extremely sensitive could be a nation state because they want to know very specific information about a person, say a senator or a congressman or even a law enforcement officer, because the information in a medical report or in someone's medical history could serve as a point of blackmail or a way to get information about that person that can then be used against them later. But for just the standard person, medical information could be used to make fraudulent claims. They could be used to engage in Medicare fraud or just even large-scale identity theft.
That is scary. And then when we talk about credit cards, I think it's pretty safe to say most all of us get what hackers want with our credit card information. And I'm wondering, to whom are they selling that information and how that happens? I mean, are they out there on the open web?
Yes, you'll find people selling credit cards on the open web and also on what's called the dark web, the sites that are hosted on Tor and other anonymized services. So you can buy credit cards virtually anywhere at very, very low costs.
Who's buying?
Well, anyone could really buy. We tend to see people buying so that way they can use the cards to either engage in fraudulent purchases online. So they might buy a dozen computers or a dozen gaming systems and have them sent to another location. Some people would buy so that way they can turn that data into a resource and they'll engage in what's called hammering. And in that case, you use credit card numbers and run them through a website for a small purchase. And so you have someone who just sits there and enters in all that data for $10 or $20 transactions. And if you do that 100 or 1,000 times, that winds up being a pretty substantial amount of money.
What kind of money could a hacker make selling that data?
It's hard to know exactly how much they can make. One of the reasons it's hard to know is because the transactions are largely hidden. So you could see someone advertising credit cards on the open web, but how much a person actually pays them in the end for the credit cards and how many cards they buy takes place via various types of interpersonal communication. Russian hackers in particular will use a service called ICQ, a type of instant messaging protocol, and it's something that only the two ICQ participants can see. So we don't always know how many transactions are completed. But if you look at within the forums where people sell the information or even in the shops where people advertise, you can see positive feedback that would suggest they've completed transactions. And in those cases, sellers could be earning thousands or tens of thousands of dollars with each transaction. And if we aggregate that out across multiple markets, places where people are selling, it could be in the hundreds of thousands or in the millions.
And I've just found myself wondering how these parties complete the deal. So you're buying, I'm selling, we're doing it in cyberspace. I'm not giving you that data till I'm paid, and you're not paying till you get the data, right?
Well, it's tricky. On the one hand, it is a marketplace, and so there's a dependence on trust between the people who are participating. Because you're right, no one knows exactly what you're going to get in the end. So the buyer is hopefully going to find a seller who's trustworthy. And that's where the idea of feedback becomes important. So you can go into a forum or someone's shop and read the reviews of their services. And at that point, you can see how many times someone's received positive feedback that suggests they deliver good data or their products work or that they're speedy in terms of communications. So in that case, that's the buyer you want to go to. You'll negotiate with that person, as I mentioned, via ICQ or some other mechanism. And at that point, once you've negotiated the price and the total size of the data that you want to buy, then the buyer is the one who has to provide payment upfront. Virtually every seller in every market we've looked at demands payment upfront. And then the seller has to deliver product within the next 24 to 48 hours, or in some cases, they'll do it immediately. But that's when they have a good degree of trust and a rapport with their clientele.
Yeah, because you're certainly not going to go to the authorities to complain if you get ripped off in this illegal transaction.
Exactly. And that's a big problem. We see a lot of people posting what are called ripping complaints. If someone says you're a ripper, that means you've ripped them off. And so in some of these open markets, someone may say that they're selling credit cards or debit card data, and they'll be selling it for pennies on the dollar. And on the one hand, a person who's new to the market may think, oh, that's a great deal. That's going to net me a ton of money. And so they send payment. What they don't know is that that person is likely going to cheat them. They're either not going to send information at all, or what they do send will have no actual monetary value. It could be that they're sitting on a bunch of cards that were obtained a year ago, and many of them have been canceled, so they won't be usable. And in that case, you're right, the buyer has no recourse. They can't call law enforcement. All they can do is say, this person ripped me off, and hope that other people don't buy from them. It's a hard market for cyber criminals to negotiate initially because they may not know who to trust or what makes a seller good or bad.
And as we're saying this, I'm sure no one has a lot of sympathy listening to us talk about those difficulties. But I have to wonder, Tom, could law enforcement use those buyer reviews, those reviews that you say are so important to this community, could law enforcement get in there and bust hackers and people buying that hacked data by wrecking things and post bad reviews?
Yes, there's something called a Sybil attack. And the idea behind that is that if you start flooding a market with positive and negative reviews, where if you make it that every seller has 15 or 20 reviews from people who've never posted before, it could be hard for the outsider to actually consider which of those reviews are real and which ones are fake. Some suggest that that's a mechanism that law enforcement could use easily without having to really engage in the marketplace. But the big problem is that the most trustworthy forums and the shops where people go to buy data are heavily managed by individuals who are referred to as moderators. That moderator can come in and delete posts at will. They can say, you know what, this person's never posted before, and the only thing that they have to say is that this is a great seller who's provided tons of good information or that they're a bad seller. In that case, the moderator could say, I don't trust that this is a legitimate review, and so I'm just going to delete this post. And they may even block the person who made the post in the first place. And in those instances, the best moderated forums are the ones that are going to be relatively immune to slander attacks or to Sybil attacks because they'll be able to easily weed out what's real and what's fake.
Well, that makes sense. Any of us who've been on message boards or, you know, fan pages, the moderator is important. So I guess I'm also in the world of thieves. Mm-hmm. What should we as individuals, Tom, those of us who don't have a corporate IT security team for us, bottom line, what should we take away from what you've just told us?
Well, the bottom line is that you have to be very careful about how you manage your personal information. On the one hand, when you're shopping online, if you can make purchases through sites that are trustworthy, that's going to make a huge difference. So going through a known retailer like Amazon or eBay or Target or any other major retailer's website is a great way to help minimize the likelihood that your information may be stolen right off the top. So if you were going to a website you never heard of before that's selling products that, let's say, 80% off their market value, that might be a hard site to trust. And so if you enter in your credit card data, there's a possibility that that site may be compromised or that it's just there to generate card information. So shopping through major retailers is one easy way to help protect your personal information. On the other side, you've got to manage and carefully review transactions. So when you're looking at your various bank and credit card statements, looking for those transactions that are suspicious, that you know you didn't make, those are some of the most immediate and easy ways to potentially identify when your information's been stolen. If you see that there's a $3 charge to a website you know you've never gone to, you ask your spouse or your kids, have you bought anything at this site using this card? If everyone says no, then that's a sign that your information may be lost. So that's a critical way to at least be proactive and figure out what's happening with your data. On the final end of things, if you know that your information's been lost, if your credit card company or your bank reissues your card and says that your data was lost in some way, shape, or form, you can always contact the three major credit bureaus and ask that your account has a fraud alert put onto it so that way you're contacted if anyone tries to create a new account or if there are odd things that occur with, say, your credit history or something else.
Tom Holt is a professor of criminal justice at Michigan State University. You'll find his piece on buying and selling hacked passwords. It's fascinating reading. You'll find it at theconversation.com. Tom, it was great talking with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.